So we are actually uncoupling out of Omni Base. Coupling out of Omni Base, 4 lines from the top. We discussed yesterday, we had a Mahalikas, Rabbi Huda, and Rabbi Yossi, whether if you pay off part of a chayv, part of a debt, do you tear up the original shtar and write a new shtar for the lesser amount, which is what Rabbi Huda says, or do you keep the original shtar and write a receipt for the amount, which is what Rabbi Yossi said. And we discussed the pros and cons of that. So now, further on that topic, Amar Rav Huna b'Rebbe Rav Yeshua, Afilu l'manda Amar Kosvin Shover, even according to Rabbi Yossi, who says that you write a shover, Hani Mili Apalgo. That's only true in the case, like described in the Mishnah, where you paid off part of the debt, and now the rest of the debt is still outstanding. So Rabbi Yossi says you don't want to ruin his shibud, as we discussed yesterday. You want to still keep pressure on the lover to pay the whole thing off. And according to the possibility that the new shtar would be dated as of the new date, you don't want to ruin his shibud either. So that would be the case then. But if it's talking about that the whole loan is being paid off, now you could have a scenario where the loiver is ready to pay off the whole loan, but he says to the malva, okay, now that I'm ready to pay off the loan, I want the shtar back so I can rip it up. And the malva says, I don't know where the shtar is. So you could argue that in that case, so Rav Huna b'Rebbe Rav Yeshua is arguing that in that case, even Rabbi Yossi would agree that you can't force the loiver to accept the shover. The loiver, therefore, would have every right to say, I'm not paying you back unless you have the shtar.
So what's the point of having a shover?
A shover is if you pay off half the loan. That's the point. The loiver would rather not have to deal with the shover for the reasons that we discussed yesterday. He has to watch it, that it doesn't get eaten by mice or otherwise more.
Saying the
Malvi
would have to say half the loan, the shover.
We're saying in the Mishnah we said that if you're paying off half the loan, then according to WAC, you don't want to ruin the Malva's shibud and you want to keep the pressure up on the loiver, therefore don't rip up the original shtar, write a shover. Here, Rav Huna b'Rebbe Rav Yeshua is saying that if, on the other hand, the loiver is paying off the entire loan, then he has the ability to say, I'm not paying you unless you have the shtar chayv available to give to me so that I can rip it up. If not, then I'm going to wait with paying off the loan until you have the shtar available, because I don't want to have to hold on to a shover indefinitely. And there's also the fact that in a case like that, Mela, in the case where he pays off half the shtar, half the chayv, okay, so, Rabbi Yossi had his reasons, like we said yesterday, why you should write a shover, why you should put that onus on the loiver to keep the shover from now on. Here, it's kind of the malva's fault. He's the one who lost the shtar. Why should we put the onus on the loiver now to accept the shover? However, the Gemara says, v'loihi. No, actually, that's not the case. This distinction that Rav Huna b'Rebbe Rav Yeshua is making between partial payment and the whole payment is not correct. Even if we're talking about paying back the entire loan and the malva says I don't have the shtar chayv available, the din would still be that you write a shover. The loiva does not have the ability to say I'm not paying you back unless you give me the shtar chayv. The malva can say I don't know where I've lost the shtar chayv. I will give you a shover, and the loiva has to be willing to accept that. And we see that from the following story. There was a case where Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef was owed money by Rabbi Abba. We had yesterday another case where Rabbi Abba owed Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef money. Like I said, then, apparently we see from the Gemara and Sota that Rabbi Abba was poor and he was constantly in debt. So here he again borrowed from Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef. Also, the case came to Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi. Omalei Havli Zuzai. And Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef says, pay off the loan, it's due. Amalei, so Rabbi Abba says, fine, Havli Shtaroi, give me my shtar, the Shkel Zuzok, and then I'll pay you back the loan. Amalei, so Rabbi Yitzchok Bar Yosef says, Shtar Chayir Kasli, I lost your shtar, Echtav Bachot Tavra, I'll write your shover instead. Amalei, so Rabbi Abba tells him, why should I have to accept the shover? Ha Rav Shmuel Dami Tavaru Ein Kosvin Shover. Didn't Rav and Shmuel both say that you don't write a shover? I'm not obligated to accept the shover. I'm not obligated to always have that onus on me to hold on to a shover, protect it from the mice, etc. You can't find your shtar? Fine. When you can find your shtar, I'll pay up. Omar, so the Dayan, Rav Chanina Bar Papi, says an interesting lashon. He says like this. Man yohiv lan me'afir de Rav Shmuel raminun ba'ayin. Halavai, somebody could give us of the dust that Rav and Shmuel are buried in, and we would put it on our eyes. In other words, it's an expression of respect for Rav and Shmuel. It's like saying, with all due respect to Rav and Shmuel, but, and what's the but? Very nice. Ravin, you're right, Rav Abba. Ravin Shmuel did say that. Rav Yochanan v'Hora Shlokish. On the other hand, we have, here is the opinion of Rav Yochanan, and here is the opinion of Rav Shlokish. They say, no, not like that. You do, in fact, write a Shover even in that case. But no, Rav Abba, you don't have a leg to stand on. Rav Yitzchak has a point. You have to pay him back his debt because it's due now. He doesn't have the shtar. Okay, he'll write you a shoigo. Ravin Shmuel did say that you don't write a shoigo. Fine, no. But we're saying, on the other hand, Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish say differently. So with all due
respect,
first of all, this is an Eretz Yisrael. The Ravin Shmuel are from Bavel, Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish are from Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, that's, you know, they're the local authority. But besides that, we have a general rule anyway in Shas that when Rav and Rav Yechanan argue on something, halacha is generally like Rav Yechanan. So therefore, he's saying so.
Even when Shmuel argues with
Yeah.
The halacha is like Rav Yechanan.
Yes.
Always.
Not always, but in general. What? The halacha is usually like Rav and Yisr v'Heter and like Shmuel and Dinei Momenu. Yeah, but that's when Rav and Shmuel are arguing. Here we have Rav and Shmuel on one side and Rav Yechanan and Rav Shlokish on the other side. So therefore, yeah, Kais ben Shover. V'chein ki ofer Ravin Amar Rav Ila, Kais ben Shover. And so also, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported that Rav Ila said also, you write a Shover in that case. And the Gemara continues, and with Stabro the Kosman Shover. It's actually logical to say that in that case you write a Shover rather than saying that the Lover should not have to pay back the debt. No, we're saying I can show you a logical reason why you shouldn't write a Shover. The Sakhata.
Are you related to Ravin
Shmuel? The E Sakhadaidach in Kosman Shover, because if you're going to argue that you don't write a Shover like Ravin Shmuel are saying, what's the logic? Just because the Malva lost his shtar, should the lawyer be able to eat the money and be happy? In other words, Hayitachen. And the fact of the matter is, he owes this money. Why should he be exempt from paying just because the other guy lost his shtar? Maskifla Abaya. So Abaya asked right back, Nu, Ve'elamai Kosman Shover. So what are you telling me then, that you're saying on that basis you should argue the guy does write a Shover? You could argue the other way around. Ovad shover shalzeh yechal alav v'chadi. You could argue the other way around. And if the loiva ends up losing his shover, and therefore now the malva has the ability to collect the loan again, should we allow that to happen? Should we allow the malva to collect illegally twice? Now, the Gemara could have easily answered that it's not as common a case. That first of all, I mean, if the malva were to collect illegally, whereas the malva were to collect illegally again, that would be blatantly, that would be blatantly dishonest. It would be blatant fraud, as opposed to the loiver is not saying, I'm never going to pay you back. I'll pay you back if you find your shtar. However, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, first of all, a buyer can be concerned about, you do have places where there are a lot of cheaters and fraudsters. And he mentions, for example, Gemara and Cholin that mentioned that the people of Pumbedissa were like that. So therefore, you do have to be concerned about cases like that. And besides that, he says, it doesn't even have to be fraud. Imagine, for example, let's say the Malva passes away. His son finds the shtar among his father's papers. He doesn't know that a shover was ever written. The loiva, meanwhile, has lost the shover. Now he comes to the loiva and says, pay up, and the loiva doesn't have any proof to the contrary. So therefore, a buyer has reason to be concerned for that as well. Amalei Rava. Well, we're going to see soon that actually there's some details about how you write a shover. You don't just want to write a shover that could cover anything after all, right? Because then how's he ever going to get paid back for any other loans he made to him? So yeah, I suppose you could write more. You could somehow. We talked about the other day about writing multiple copies of a shtar. It's not so simple. But okay, even if you write multiple copies, then what if all of them get lost? You know, I mean, again, it's not like you have a central repository to keep it in. The loiva himself is responsible for keeping them. If mice come and eat one of them, they're going to come and eat all of them. Yeah, okay, fine. But like we said yesterday, yesterday when we were over here, then Mendel Gorowitz brought up that point. It's true. But there you don't have a choice. One way or the other, the malva is going to have a shtar to hold on to. The fact of the matter is, unless he wants it to be a milval pair, yeah, he's going to have the onus of guarding the shtar. But at least, why should we have to put that onus on the loiva as well? Amalei Rava. So Rava answers to Abaya, yes, ain. Eved loiva le'ish malva. After all, as the Pasuk says, the loiva is a slave to the malva, not literally a slave. But in other words, yes, if you have a choice, who should be the one to have the onus on him? Better it should be that if he loses the shoiva, he may end up in a situation where the other guy is going to claim the money from him again and he doesn't have any proof he paid it. That should be the responsibility of the loiva. Therefore, yes, it's true you do to keep the shofar. So fine, it's true you have a point that if you write a shofar, then the lover may be in trouble if he loses it. Fine, that's just how it is. Yes, the lover is going to have to take that responsibility. It's part of the responsibility that he takes on when he becomes a lover. What? No, we're talking about the lawyer over here is the one, the borrower is the one who from now on is going to have to watch his shofar. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay, but still, it's very nice. You paid back the loan, but still, you don't want to, you want to have some kind of proof. And now the point is now he lost his shtar. You shouldn't take away the ability to collect his loan just because he lost his shtar. Okay. So now we're going to get...
Why can we post the obligation on both the Levi and the Malvi? The Malvi could have a shofar also. You should keep it.
The shofar is supposed to be in the hands of the Levi. Why would the Malvi
have the
shofar? Why would the Malvi
be in the hands of the Levi? But there should be one copy in the hand of the Malvi. So,
and the Malvi could just as easily suppress it. The whole, what do you mean suppress it? What do you mean how could he do it? I lost it. I never had it. Yeah, whatever. But then he'd bring out his original shtar without the shofar.
And then the game.
Yeah, okay. There is a bit of discussion, by the way, among the poskim, for example, the Shach, for example, talks about, some others talk about, why don't we just write the shofar on the shtar itself? And they give a few different answers, among others, that if we're talking about paying part of the loan, then now it ruins the shivud on the shtar, and also what if there physically isn't room on the shtar to write a shofar, and there's a number of possibilities like that. Okay, anyway. Going further into now this matter of, we started talking about yesterday, about predated and postdated documents. We talked about yesterday the case.
What's the conclusion is it?
Conclusion is Kosman Shofar. So Kosman Shofar, in the case of our Mishnah where you paid back part of the loan, then like Rab said Kosman Shofar, but based in a, not that Kosman Shofar, in a case of a partial payment, what we do is we do like Rab said, based in rips up the original shtar and writes the new shtar as of the original date for half the amount. In the case where the entire loan was paid off, then if the shtar is unavailable, then you write a shofar. Tanan Hossam, we learn in a Mishnah in Shvius, Shtar Chov HaMokdomen Psolin, predated Shtar Chov is possible, because then you're claiming that the shibud began earlier than it really did, so therefore you're victimizing anybody who bought property from Loiva during that time. V'HaMokhorin Chen, the post-dated ones are kosher. Post-dated ones are kosher because then fine, you're making the shibud start later than it really did. Amar Rav Hamnuna, however, Rav Hamnuna says it depends. Lo shonu ela shtarei halva. This rule that you can have a post-dated shtar only applies to a shtar of a loan. Aval shtarei mekach hamemka afilu mochorin nami tzulin. But when it comes to a shtar of mekach hamemka, a shtar of buying and selling property, then even a post-dated one is possible. My timer, zimnin demazgin lay out of the nissen, because you can have like this. When you sell property, the assumption in those days apparently was you sold the property, but you still retain the right to buy it back whenever you want. So I guess the idea is because you know the Gemara mentions elsewhere in Yevamos, for example, a person who has no karka is not really a full human being. So therefore, like you want to give the guy a chance to regain his place in society, to have his land back if he gets money. So therefore, zimnin de mazbin lay arab nissen. So it can happen. It can happen that you sell somebody land in nissen because of labor tishrei. You post date the shtar to be saying that you. You post-date the shtar to Tishrei 6 months later.
When is that?
We're talking about, let's say, with a shtar mekach hamemka. What's the problem with post-dating it? The problem is going to be as follows. You sold the property in Nissan. The cost of labor Tishrei, but you post-dated the document to claim that it was done then following Tishrei. Meanwhile, the moicher manages to get together some cash. Bezabin lemine, so he buys it back from the other guy, which, as we just said, he has the right to do. Vechimati Tishrei, now when Tishrei comes, mafikle, the original lekeach will pull out the document, and he'll tell him, I bought it from you again. Sure, I sold it back to you in Tammuz, but this, you see, the shtar is dated Tishrei. Obviously, I must have bought it again from you the following Tishrei, and therefore you don't have any rights to it. So to avoid that, we're not going to allow a predated or post-dated shtar mekach hamemka.
You didn't bring it up.
By the way, even By the way, even with even the Shtar Halvah, one of the things that Rishonim point out is a Shtar Halvah can only be postdated only if you write in it to Ikni, only if you write this concept that we learned about a couple of weeks ago that you say that I'm being shabbat any property I will buy in the future. Otherwise, you can't postdate it anyway because, and again, you're messing up the shibud for people who for any property that he bought after that time that he bought and sold after that time is going to look like it's part of the shibud when really it's not. Anyway, but here so here we're saying as far as shtar mekach hamemzer that you can't postdate. Okay, so the Gemara asks the Hachi, if you're going to go by that logic, Shtar Halvah Nami, then why can you post-date a Shtar Halvah either? Zimnin de Yazif in Nissen, can't you have the same problem? You might borrow the money in Nissen, because of a Shtar of Tishrei, he'll write the Shtar dated the following Tishrei, from Mitzrami le'zuzet b'ni, he'll earn money meanwhile, or part of it, he'll pay back his loan, but only have the Shtaroi. Meanwhile, he'll say to the other guy, he'll say to the loiva, I'm paying back a loan, give me my Shtar, and the guy will say that I lost it, because of a tabra, and as we just established in the previous sugya, we will therefore write him a shogar. Now what happens? Same problem. When it comes Tishrei, the date on the shtar, the malva will pull out that shtar chov, and he'll say, Hani hashtahu diyazfis minoi. He'll say, you only borrowed it from me now. In other words, if we assume that we have a shogar, and the Gemara is also assuming at the moment the shover is dated. So the shover might be dated Tammuz, let's say. So if he borrowed money in Nissan, paid it back in Tammuz, and got a shover written then, but the shachov was dated the following Tishrei, what's going to happen? Come Tishrei, the Malveh is going to say, "New, we're paying. You have a shover. That's from last Tammuz. That's from a previous law." So why are we allowing a shachov on the Ucha? Why are we allowing a post-dated shachov? That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to see if there's, yeah, good. Okay. The answer is Kosova in Kosov and Shover. Okay. The Tana of that Mishnah in Shavuos evidently holds, like the opinion of Rabbi Huda in our Mishnah, that you don't write a Shover. No Shover, then there's no problem. However, Amalei Rabbi Yemel of Kahana, Va'amil Rabbi Yumi Yibidifti of Kahana, so Rabbi Yemar or Rabbi Yumi Yibidifti asks of Kahana, what about for Ha'idna? What about what this that you see that people do nowadays? Dekasvin and Shtori Mulchori, people write a Shtar Choy which is post-dated. Now we're going to say later in the Gemara, we're going to say you're not supposed to do that, because after all it's Mefti Kishikra, it looks like something false. Nevertheless though, like the Mishnah said over there, it is Tosha B'Dievet. So, why they're doing it, because sometimes, whatever, they had reasons maybe why they wanted to post-date it. I don't know, whatever it is. They would sometimes do that.
So they're post-dating a what?
A shtar chov. So a guy borrows money in Nissan, but instead of writing the shtar chov as of Nissan, he writes it as if it was the following tissue. So let's say they do that.
Do you think of one example when somebody wanted to do that?
I don't know. Maybe if he, I don't know.
But maybe for his bookkeeping.
Yeah, could be. Yeah. Anyway. Because Vin and Tavra, and we do write a shogar, according to what you just said, that should create a problem. Am I carved in and hachi? So why do we do that? I'm a lay, so kind of answer.
Why do we post-date?
Not why do we post-date, but if we're post-dating a shtar and we're writing a shogar, you're saying the Mishnah and in Shavuos holds you don't write a shogar, therefore there can't be a problem. But we who do write a shogar, how do we allow post-dated documents? I'm a lay, so he answers him, because we have a takana that came up after that time. After Rav Abba, I don't know if this is the same Rav Abba from the previous story, not necessarily, there were a few Rav Abbas and Shafs. Anyway, once we have the Takana, the Rav Abba told his Sofer, Ki kasvitu shtar mulchori, if you write a post-dated shtar, kisvu hachi, you need to write in it the following lashon. Shtara dinan loy bezimne kasavne, we did not write the shtar on the date which is written at the top of the shtar, ela echanuhu v'kasavnuhu, rather we post-dated it. Well then, if it says that explicitly in the shtar, then that's the equivalent of what we said yesterday, where you have a shtar dated, that where the date turns out to be Shabbos, Yom Kippur, where there's no, we have to assume that it was post-dated. So therefore, so now there won't be any problem. When the guy pulls out his shoiva from Tammuz and the Malva pulls out his shtar chayiv dated Tishrei, we'll know because it says right there in the shtar that it wasn't actually written in Tishrei. Therefore, we'll say to the Malva, you want to claim that this loan wasn't paid off and that the shoiva doesn't refer to it. Well then, you got to bring proof when it was actually written, and it'll turn out that it was written in Nissan.
The date that is written on the shtar refers to the writing of the shtar.
No, that's what we're saying. The whole point of a shtar me'ukhar is you're writing it in Nissan and you're dating it the following Tishrei.
So,
whatever the reason is, maybe it's happened because of his bookkeeping or whatever it is.
What? So you write in the shtar, the loan was made on such a day.
No, but you don't. That's the thing. You're not writing. You're writing in the shtar that you're not writing the date of the loan. You're writing a later date. You're writing that the shibud of the shtar begins as of some date in Tishrei. But because it explicitly says in the shtar now, based on Rav Abba's takana, you explicitly write there that it is post-dated. Therefore, we know not to just take the date. Therefore, we know not to take the date at face value.
One second. When you're saying that the shtar is post-dated, that means to say that
it means it's written in Nissan. Yes, it means it's written in Nissan, and they pretend as if it's written the following Tishrei. Yes,
that's one way of looking at
it. But that's what it means. What do you mean? That's one.
The other way of looking at it is. The shtar is post-dated, meaning that the shibud starts later than it's written.
If you did that, then that's the equivalent of writing that it's post-dated. Then you don't need to say. Then you don't have a question in the first place. The point is, you only have one date in it, and it you're making it as though the loan was actually taken out on that date. But as long as they explicitly write that it's not like that, it was post-dated, then you're good. However, Amalei Rav Ashi de Kahana, but next Rav Ashi asked Rav Kahana, but even the Loikav din and Hachi. What about though in a later time when we don't do that, we don't write that nusach of Rav Abba in a shtar? So what do we do? And the answer is both. The answer
for another time.
Another time, I guess. Yeah. Which means not necessarily the same Rav Kahana. There were six or seven Rav Kahanas in shtar. So
I thought there were six or seven.
Maybe seven. I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway. The answer is Basu de Amalei Rav Safra was Safra. Yes, but we have another takana that Rav Safra said to his Sofri, which evidently the reason was because people were forgetting to write this nusach of Rav Abba's in there, and therefore it was creating a problem. So Rav Safra came up with a new idea. Ki kasvitu hani tabri. What you do is like this. Don't do anything with the shtar. Fine. You want a post-dated shtar, just write the post-date. Don't say anything about it being post-dated because you may not remember to write it. Rather, when it comes to the shover, if you know the date of the original shtar, then write that, which is what you were saying, Yaakov, that if the agent remember what the date of the original shtar was, then they should write, this shover is canceling the debt, it shows that the debt that was taken out on Aleph Nissen, Topshin, Ayin, Zion is now paid off. If not, then just write stam, that the shover is that this loan, that a loan of $100 was paid off. And to call Emas to Nothit, Lare, that way, anytime if the Malva ever brings out its Shtar Chayv and claims, wait a minute, though, I only lent you money in Tishrei, the other guy can pull out the Shover, which has no date in it at all. It doesn't refer to the date of the loan at all. And therefore, the lawyer can say, well, the Shover that paid you off. Now, the obvious question is, wouldn't that prevent the Malva from ever collecting from this loiver? So the Rashbam points out, from now on, if you're going to do according to that takana, the Malva does have to make sure he never again lends this guy the exact same amount of money. So if previously he lent him 100, next time if he needs to lend him, he should lend him 101 or whatever. In that way, the shover says that we paid off a loan of 100, so therefore he'll obviously not refer to the next one. However, then, yet later, Ravina asked Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi the Rav Kahana, and others say Rav Ashi asked this Rav Kahana, V'haha idna, d'loikav din hachi. What about as time goes on, we don't even do that. People just write a post-dated shtar, and they write a shover with a date in it, and they don't write don't you have the problem that we were discussing? Amalei, so Rav Kahana, or Rav Ashi says, Rabbanan takuni takini. The Rabbanan made a takana. The Rabbanan told you what to do, either according to Rav Abba's method or according to Rav Safra's method. Manda ovid ovid. If somebody does that, good, they do it. Manda loy ovid, and if somebody chooses not to follow that, iud after the nafshe, then that's his problem. He's the one who caused himself a loss.
Ravina had to say that to
Rav Ashi?
I mean, that's
not so
obvious.
No, Ravina is the one saying it to Ravina.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Ravina assumed, or Rav Ashi assumed when he asked Rav Kahana, that people follow what the Chachamim say, and Ravina and Rav Ashi or Rav Kahana is telling them not necessarily. People sometimes think they know better. But
Ravina is always talking to Rav Ashi. Ashi was in Kedisa, or
Rav Ashi was in Surah. And Ravina was also. Ravina was his Talmud father.
Was
his Talmud father,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay. But Rav Ashi was the Rosh Hashiva,
and Ravina was his, yeah. Well, he was a Talmud father, yeah. Okay. more on this topic of post-dated shtaris.
What's the conclusion?
So the conclusion so far is you have a way of avoiding this problem. You can write the shover. You can either write in the shtar explicitly that's post-dated, or you cannot write a date in the shover. If you don't do one or the other, if you post-date a shtar without saying that it's post-dated, and you put a date in the shover, that's your problem. Next, Rabba Bar Rav Shila said to people who are writing Shtarei Akniyosa. Now, what is a Shtar Akniyosa? The Rashbam says it means davka a Shtar of Matana or a Shtar of Mechira where there's no Achrayus. Because if it's a Shtar that has Achrayus, you can't predate it, we're going to talk about over here now, if the shtar is written sometime after the kinyan took place, that you're writing the original date. If it's a shtar where there's a chayus, you can't do that. Because then the shibud only begins as of when the shtar is written, and you can't predate it. But if you have a shtar matana, or a shtar mecha, where there's no chayus, therefore it has no bearing on anybody else, then you can go and do what he's going to say now. Many other Rishonim learn differently. They say it can even refer to a shtar of a sale where there is achrayus. However, what we mean by shtar akniyasa means whether a kinyan was done, that a kinyan sudur was done. Once a kinyan sudur is done, they learn, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, then the shibud taka begins as of then, even if the shtar is only written later. So therefore, he says,
shibud started with a kinyan.
With a kinyan. So therefore, he says, Kikasvitu shtore akniyasa. When you write the shtar akniyasa, again, according to the Rashbam, either a shtar matana or mecha without achrayus, according to everybody else, even with achrayus, as long as it was a kinyan. Iyad itu yoyma de knisube. If you know the actual date when the purchase or the sale was done, or the kinyan, if we're going according to that explanation, kisvu, then you should write that in the shtar. So even though, so let's say, for example, the actual sale or the kinyan, as the case may be, whatever was done Rosh Chodesh Nissan, you didn't get around to writing the shtar until Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Nevertheless, write Rosh Chodesh Nissan, because that's when the actual sale was done. If it's a shtar matana or mecha without achrayus, or if we say that a kinyan was done, then fine. The kinyan sodor itself makes the shib would be in effect. Not the shibud rather, but the achrayus rather, the achrayus on the usual achrayus on the sale. But if we say that, according to all the other rishonim, we're talking about a kinyan is done over here, a kinyan sudur. Once the kinyan sudur is done, then the achrayus is already in effect.
Right.
So therefore, you can write the shtar as of then, even if you're only writing the shtar a month later.
Do you include the date of the achrayus?
Yeah, that's what you do with the date.
The
you do.
Kinyan?
Yeah, that's what we're saying. That's what he's saying. If you remember, now when you're writing the shtar a few weeks later or whatever, if you remember the actual date when the sale was done or when the kinyan sudur was done, then you should write that.
In the shtar.
In the shtar. The Eloi, kisvu yoyma de kai misube. If not, then just write the date, then just write the current date. Tiheche de la miskazi kisirta, because that way it won't look like something untrue. In other words, if you don't remember, it was the one thing it points out in Shulchan Aruch is to give an example. Actually, it gives an example there involving Tishrei and Cheshvan. So let's use that. So let's say, for example, the kinyan was done sometime in Tishrei. They don't remember when. Meanwhile, comes now the beginning of Kislev, and they're finally getting around to writing the shtar. Now, they might think to say, okay, let's just write that it was done as of Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. We know it was definitely done sometime during Tishrei, so the latest it could have been done is Lama Tishrei. Let's just write it was as of Aleph Cheshvan and have done with it. Can't do that. That would be mechtik kishikra. It would look like a falsehood. And therefore, you can't do that. In that case, just write.
Mistake the kinyan.
Right, because you know it was sometime during Tishrei, so if you remember the exact date, write that. And so the Maribe Rav says over there in Shulchan Aruch that, let's say, for example, all they remember is it was sometime, let's say, during the first 10 days of Tishrei, during Aseret Mitzvah. Fine, they can write that. It was sometime during the first third of Tishrei.
Right.
But if they don't know any more specifically than that, then they should just write the current date.
Oh.
And in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about, by the way, that Shach mentioned that therefore the wording is going to be slightly different. If you remember the date, then you're going to write, we made the kinyan on such and such a date, and now we're writing the shtar. On the other hand, if you don't, then you should say, we made a kinyan, and we're writing the shtar on such and such a date. And that way, no matter what, you'll be writing something which is true. Similarly, on another topic of making sure that what you write in a shtar is accurate, Amalahu Rav L'Safre, Rav told his Sofrim, who wrote Shtoris for his Beisdin, V'chein Amalahu Rav Huna L'Safre, and similarly Rav Huna told the Sofrim of his Beisdin, Ki Kaimitu Shili, if you are standing, if the shtar is being written in the town of Shili, so it can be any kind of shtar, it can be a sale, or a halvar, or a gift, or edus, or whatever. No, it's in Bavel. Kisvu b'shili. Make sure that you write that it took place in Shili. Even if the instruction to do it took place in Hini. Now, Hini is a town near Shili. In fact, the Gemara mentions in Beitza that they were only one or two Tum Shabbos apart, because the Gemara mentions over there that they walked from one to the other on Yom Tov. So the point is, even though they were so close, and even though maybe the instructions to write the shtar were given in Hini, nevertheless, now you're sitting down to write it, you're doing it in Shili, that's what you should write, because you should be accurate. You should be writing the truth. And some of the Rishonim point out there is it's Negea anyway, because, for example, you might have... Tosfos actually brings that thing in Beitza, but the Rishonim point out there's reasons for it anyway. For one thing, you need Eidos Shata Yochel LaHazima. You need to be able to be Mazim the Eidim. If you write the wrong place, then how are you going to be Mazim then? The Shtar is what they're going to say Hini, when in fact they were in Shili. People are going to come and say, wait a minute, Imanu HaYisim in Shili, and then the whole thing is going to fall apart. So you can't do that. And there's a few other reasons that Rishonim give also why we're picky about writing the right place.
Isn't that obvious?
No, not necessarily. Especially you would think that Hini and Shili are so close together, and you were given the instructions in Hini. Maybe it doesn't matter so much where you're standing right now.
That's the place where it was done.
Yes, that's what we're saying. And similarly, ki kaimitu bihini, similarly, if you're standing in Hini and writing the document there, kisvu bihini, make sure that you write that it takes place in Hini, va'afagab demesidim l'chum milim b'shili, and even if you were given the instructions in Shili, for the same reason, so it doesn't look like a lie. So it doesn't look like a falsehood, and then there are these practical reasons.
Not look like it.
No, but if it's close enough, you could argue that if you were given the instructions in Hini, then maybe to that extent, maybe you could consider that it was written in Hini. But no, maybe also the point is, you shouldn't combine them. You shouldn't say we wrote it in Hini Shili. You know, make sure that you, Okay. More genuine
from
about...
Very close to each other.
Yeah, no, okay. More dinim on the topic of shtoris and writing the right thing in the shtar. Omar Rava, Haiman de Noket Shtara by Meizuzi. If a malva has a shtar that there was a loan of 100 zuzim, for Omar and the loiver asked him, Shabda nearly today bnei chamshin chamshin. Instead, let's write out two documents that are 50 each. Loima shavinim lahu. We don't do that. Now the shach points out if they both agree, then fine, they can do however they want. No, it's not a question of a lie. The fact is he borrowed 100. What would be the difference if he wrote two shtarim?
He borrowed 50, he borrowed 100.
And if you were to say, money is fungible. If you were to write two shtarim,
facts are not.
If you were to write two shtarim, no, the problem over here isn't lies. The problem is something else. If you were to write two shtaris of the same day, one that says that Reuven borrowed from Shimon 50, and another one that says that Reuven borrowed from Shimon 50, on the face of it, what's the problem? It's 100.
So it's not factual.
But it is. He borrowed altogether 100. And
he didn't borrow it the same way.
Doesn't matter. No, that's not the issue. That's not the issue. Again, and therefore the Shach says if they both agree to do this, fine. You can structure your loan however you want. But there's a reason over here why when we say loy v'shavin lahu, we don't do it without the consent of both of them. Why? My timer. Because the Rabbanan imposed this rule in order to protect the rights of the malva and also in order to protect the rights of the loyva. Nichalei the malva, it's better off for the malva if he has one shtar that says 100, kadesh yokuf l'pore, because like we said yesterday, there'll be more pressure to pay off a loan of 100. The guy will feel under more pressure because it's a larger amount. He knows that other people know there's a loan of 100 outstanding, and therefore his properties will be depreciated, and he'll have a harder time selling them unless he pays off the loan. There's no possibility that he's going to say it's only a small amount. The guy's not going to notice, whatever. All the various explanations we had yesterday. So in that sense, having one shtar of 100 benefits the malva. And nichalei loiva, it also, in a way, benefits the loiva. Kiyeche the nifgam shtarei. Because the advantage of it is that this way, if he ends up paying back part of the chayv, So we said you don't write a shoiver in the end. We said that we said that you rip up the shtar. But let's say even you don't. Let's say, for example, even you write on the shtar itself, half of it has been paid off. Now what you've accomplished, now from the loiva's point of view, you have an accomplishment, which is, we learned back in the Rashbam mentions, we learned in Ksubas, we will eventually learn in Shavuos, Bez Hashem, that once a shtar is pogum, once a shtar says on it that it's been partially paid off, or the Malva admits that it's been partially paid off, either way, then if he wants to be, if he claims that the rest has not been paid off, then he's going to need to swear in Beis Din in order to collect the rest. So therefore, there's an advantage over here. If you had, if the loan is for the loiva, there's an advantage for there being a shtar of a full 100. Namely, if it was two shtaros of 50, he'd pay one of them off, it would be ripped up. The other one is not pogum, though. If now the malva claims you haven't paid off the other 50 yet, and the loiva disagrees with that, all the malva will have to do is swear a shavuot hesed, then he'll be able to collect.
Well, he's swearing anyway.
Right? Or no, actually, I think in that case, the loiva actually is going to have to swear the shavuot hesed.
And well, if the
loiva swears, then it'll be possible. Then it'll be possible, right? Then it's not. Then.
So that's worse for the malva because then he gets off.
But swearing a shavuot hesed is not so simple. But the point is, like this: if it's half paid off, the malva is going to one who has to is going to be the one who has to swear, and actually he's going to have to swear a shavuot chamura, not just a shavuot hesed. He's going to have to swear a real shavuot that he hasn't had the rest paid off. So therefore, in that sense, the loiva, not only the malva is better off with a shtar of 100, but the loiva is better off with a shtar of 100 as well, because then he's able to pay back part of the loan and turn it into a shtar problem.
So why would he have to take any out? If he has two shtars, why would he have to take any?
Then that's the thing. Then you would have two shtars. He paid off one. The other is still outstanding. Then if you claim it didn't pay back, you'd be
clever enough to make some kind of a claim.
Yeah.
That.
So the loiva claims I paid it off, or it's a forged shtar or whatever, then we would, not a forged shtar, okay, then you're mekayim the shtar, but whatever. If he claims I paid it off, for example, midaraisa, he wouldn't do anything, because he's a kofar hakel, midrabbanim, he swears a shavuot hesed.
You know, the guy has a shtar.
Maybe not, I don't know, whatever. The point is that at least if it's a shtar pogum, there's a malva.
The other way, he would have to pay anyway. And no one would have to take it up. He just has to pay. No.
Maybe, but be that as it may, if the shtar pogum, in order for the malva to be able to collect on the rest of it, he's going to need a shuvah.
Yeah,
so therefore, it's the loiva's benefit. Pogum meaning it's so to speak damaged. Like the shtar originally said 100, but now we're saying only 50 is outstanding. In order to collect that other 50, the malva would have to swear. So therefore, it's better.
The shtar by writing on it, or by saying.
Or by saying that I agree that part of it was paid off. Okay. So that's why we can't make it in two shtar. It's not a question of mestik shikra or not, but a matter of that it will benefit. It's a benefit to the malva for there to be one of 100, and it's a better benefit just for the loiva to be for there to be one of 100. Similarly, for Omar Rava, and Rava says the reverse is also true. Haiman denokit trei shtarei b'nei chamshin chamshin. If it's the other way around, if the malva has two shtarei each of 50. But Omar shavinu niali chad barmeya, and the loiva says, why don't we make it into one shtar of 100? Same thing. Again, we don't do it without the consent of both of them. Same thing. Over the Rabbanan Milta, the Nichale the Malva, the Nichale the Loiva. Again, the Rabbanan want to impose this because we want to protect the rights of the Malva as well as the rights of the Loiva. And it's the opposite of the previous case. Nichale the Malva, Kiechadava, Nichim Shtari. The Malva is better off with there being two separate starters because then there's not this problem of a Shtar problem. Again, if the guy pays off 50, then he still has another shtar of 50, which is not pogum, and he can collect from it like he would normally collect with a shtar.
If he had
two separate shtars. Whereas if it was one shtar, then like we just said, it would be a shtar pogum. And v'nichale l'loiva, kadesh l'yokok l'pare. And on the other hand, the loiva benefits from there being two separate shtars, because then there's not as much pressure on him to pay. So therefore, in other words, again, unless they both consent, then we can't convert one kind to the other. Another case, Omer Avashi. What about a third possible case? What if the malva has in his hand a shtar of that he lent him 100 zuz to Omar, and the loiva and the malva says shabim shabuni niali chad bar chamshin, and the malva offers the malva goes to the sofer and says I want you to rip up this original shtar and write a new shtar of 50. The guy paid me all 50. So you would think, what could potentially be the problem? Shouldn't you allow to do it? No, we still don't do that. my time, I'm reading high mishra pare because we have to consider the possibility that maybe the loiva paid him off completely. But omalei have the shtaroi, and the loiva had said to him, give me the shtar so that I can rip it up. But omalei irkesli, and the malva had said, like we discussed before, I lost it because of the tavra, and he writes him a shover, like we said before, with alocha, he writes him a shover. And now he's going to bring out this shtar of 50, and he's going to claim it's a different one, because your shover said you paid off a loan of 100, and now I have a shtar that says you owe me 50. So there is a possible, so there is possible trickery, and therefore we don't want to do that.
But I assume that's in the flourish.
That what?
That you just need to... Okay,
no, no.
I don't remember.
Okay. He can come back and claim that it's a different that it's a different star. That it's a different star, yeah. Tosfos points out, by the way, we could have used the same logic as far as the other case, as far as Rava's two cases of 50 versus 100. But there we're talking about even if we know that none of it was paid off yet, so therefore there's none of that problem. But you still have the problems that Rava was pointing out over there, that you have in a way two shtaros of 50 are better for the loiva and also better for the malva, and in a way one shtar of 100 is better for the loiva and better for the malva.
So what do we do? We do two.
So that's it. So therefore you leave the shtaros as they are. If you have two shtaros of 50, you have to leave it as 50 unless they both consent. If you have one shtar of 100, you have to leave it as 100 unless they both consent. And if you have a shtar of 100, we don't allow you, Malva, to go unilaterally to a sofer and change it instead out for and swap it out for a shtar of 50.
But if we do allow both to go together.
If they go together, then sure. Yeah. Now this Mishnah is kind of going to digress from the topic.
Encouraging when you want to borrow money.
Well, the Rabbanon have to balance the interests of the Malva and the interests of the Loiva. Yeah. Okay. This next Mishnah is a little bit off topic of the subject of our Perek. And it's interesting, the Rif wrote his Sefer, he actually called it Sefer HaHalachas, because his business is usually just to explain what's the bottom line halacha that we get out of the Gemara. From the writings of the Goyanim, etc. But here, very uncharacteristically, he explains what this next Mishnah is doing over here. He says like this, usually he would just say what the halacha is one way or the other, but here he gets into explaining why is this next Mishnah here. So he says like this, the previous Mishnah talked about this case of ripping up the original shtar and writing a new one, or writing a shover, and we said in the Mishnah and in the following Gemara that you have cases where, given either possibility, if you don't write a shover, then you have a possibility that the loiva may not pay off his loan when he's supposed to. If you write a shover, you have a possibility that he loses it, and the malva is in a position to be able to collect again. Our Mishnah, therefore, is going to talk in a similar vein, that you have cases where you have two people who have claims on something, and it winds up that one of them ends up losing because he's not able to take advantage of what he has, basically, or because we have two cases in the Mishnah, one involving a poor and a rich brother, and the other one involving two people that have the same name, where you have a shtar that you have against one of them might actually be from the other. So that's what the Rif says, that's why this next Mishnah belongs here. So the Mishnah says, Shnei Achin, if you have two brothers, Echad Ani ve'Echad Asher, one is poor, one is rich, their father left them as an inheritance, a bathhouse, or an olive press. If they were made, in other words, while the father was alive, they were made for renting out. The father didn't use them himself; he rented them out and then collected the income. Fine. Then they continue doing that. They continue renting it out, and they split the rental equally. Some of the Rishonim, I think the Baal Amor, want to say, actually, I don't remember the Baal Amor, but actually Tosfos elsewhere said earlier in the Masechta, when it talks about this, says that maybe also Asar Maschar can also mean even if the father himself didn't rent them out, but if it is something that's capable of being rented out now. Anyway, Asan La'atma, what if it's something that the father used only himself, or that can't be rented out, or whatever? So now the rich brother argues, fine, then we should continue using it. And the poor brother says, well, I can't afford to use it anyway. I don't have any olives to press in there. I don't have anybody who needs to use the bathhouse. I would rather that we either rent it out, rather that we just sell it. No. Harei Osho Oimelani, the rich brother can say to the poor one, Kach Lecha Avadim Yichutzu B'Mechot, fine, if you buy yourself slaves, then...
He doesn't have money,
but in other words, we're going to continue using it the way our father used it. You and your family are entitled to use it. Or if you buy slaves, they're entitled to use it. Then they can bathe in the bathhouse. Or earlier in the Masechta, we brought this, and in connection with the you know, good or ogud, which we're going to talk about in a second, then Rashi over there mentioned it within the first paragraph. When we talked about this, that maybe kachlach avodim can also mean you can, if you have slaves, you can heat up water for the bathhouse, you'll be able to use it. In other words, it's not my problem that you can't afford to use it. Right. Or if you buy yourself olives, then gesunt hate, you can press them in the olive press. He doesn't have press, but the point is, in other words, the poor brother does not have the ability to say let's just sell it. Now, what about though? Now the Gemara over here,
he could force his brother to say, give me my share number.
But we explained earlier in the Masechta that we're talking about a case over here where it's too small to divide. Now, there's a small enough bathhouse, there's a small enough Beis Habad, that if you split it, neither one is going to have something functional. However, the Gemara did take up over there. Now, we're not going to discuss this part of the Mishnah and the Gemara over here because the Gemara dealt with it in the first paragraph. We had a concept over there called good or good. Good has two possible meanings. It can mean to cut off, like to establish a price, or it can mean to pull. So good or ogud can mean either you fix a price or I'll fix a price. In other words, one of us will buy the other one out. Or it can mean you pull or I pull, meaning in other words, you can buy off my share from me or I'll buy off my share from you. And the Gemara says that even if you have a piece of nechasim that are not big enough to divide, like a chater that's too small, or in this case a merchot or a beit habad that's too small to divide, you do have a din of good or ogud. So why don't we apply it over here? Why doesn't the poor brother have the ability to say that to the rich brother? The Gemara explains over there because only the rich brother has the ability to do that. The poor brother does not. The Taka doesn't have money. If it was an equal thing where either of them is able to do that, either of them has the money to do that, fine, then we would apply good or ogud. But because over here only one of them does and the other one does not, the rich brother has the ability to say, I'm not obligated to buy out your portion. If you have the money to buy out my portion, then fine, I'm willing to sell. I'm not willing to buy yours, but you don't have the money, so that's your problem. No,
it's terrible.
But that's what the din is.
Aesthetically practical.
Should we say that he shouldn't go to Pnim Meshurat HaDin? No, of course he could go to Pnim Meshurat HaDin, but we have to learn what the actual halacha is. The actual halacha is I'm not obligated in good or ogur unless it's a bilateral thing. Either one of us is able to buy out the other. Therefore, if you can't, not my problem. I am going to continue using it the way our father used it. If you ever raise the money to do the same thing, then you can do
the
same.
Can he say to his brother, I'm not selling the store, but I will pay you your share? Can he say that?
What do you mean, I will pay him?
I will pay you the amount of money that your share is worth.
That would be buying him out. That would be buying him out.
So
that, if, I don't understand. If the rich brother wants to buy him out, he's going to hate. He can buy him out. But the poor brother can't force the rich brother to do that because the rich brother can to sell because the poor brother doesn't have money. And the rich brother can counter, I'm not obligated to sell it to you because it's not bilateral. You wouldn't be able to buy, not to sell, I'm not obligated to buy you out because you wouldn't be able to buy me out. So therefore, I'll continue using it the way our father did. And if you have the ability to
should be able both to buy each other out.
Because one has money and one doesn't.
That's the point. So if one has money, why can't he buy out his brother?
If he wants to buy him out, he could. He's not obligated. No, but that he's not obligated to. He's not obligated to. That's the point. That's what Rif says. That's what our Mishnah is doing over here. The same way as in the previous Mishnah, we had, for example, according to Rav Yosi, you write a shover. You can have a possibility that the loiver can lose the shover and end up having to pay the loan all over again. That's how it is. It's his problem. Same thing over here. In our Mishnah, you have the poor brother's problem. Now, with that said, it does talk about in Shulchan Aruch, what if the poor brother, for example, offers, he says, fine, I'll go borrow money from somebody and go and buy you out, and then I'll go sell it to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So the Mechaber says, that's fine, you have to accept that, or the rich brother has to accept that. However, the Ramah brings from the Torah that even in that case you don't, because he says, good or ogur would only apply if either one of them is going to continue using it themselves, not if I'm buying it only in order to sell it to a third party.
Okay.
Yeah, the Mechaber between the Mechaber and the Ramah. Another case.
The Ramah says you cannot borrow money to
sell it. Not you. If the poor brother offers, I'm going to borrow money, and then I'm going to buy out your portion, and then I'm going to take the merchat and sell it to somebody else, the rich brother can say, I'm sorry, I'm not obligated to do that.
Does the Mechaber hold?
The Mechaber holds that he would be.
Yeah.
because the fact is the poor brother can raise the money. Mishnah continues. Shnayim shohayu bi'irachas. So if you have two people living in the same city, Shem Echad Yosef ben Shimon or Shem Acha Yosef ben Shimon, both of them are named the same name, Yosef ben Shimon. Ein yichoyim lohoti shtar choyv zalzeh. Neither one is able to claim a shtar choyv against the other, because if Yosef ben Shimon the first says to the second one, I have a shtar that you owe me money, the other guy can counterclaim, just the other way around. You owe me money, I've lost the shtar and you found it. Yes. Nor can anybody else bring out a shtar chayv against either of them, because if you say it's you owe me, the guy can pay. It's the other guy owes. No. Fine. Yes. Nims and another din. Nims la echad ben shtaros of shtaros or Yosef ben Shimon parua. What if somebody finds among his shtaros, he finds a shover or whatever that says that the loan of Yosef that he lent to Yosef ben Shimon is paid off? Shtaros shnei pruin. Then we have to consider both of them are paid off. So again, moitz machaber l'varai. Kesed yasu. So how do we avoid this whole situation? What should he do? Yishalshu. Don't just write Yosef ben Shimon. Write Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov versus Yosef ben Shimon ben Naftali, for example. Write their grandfather's names. What if they have the same grandfather's names also? Yichtivu Simon. They should write some other Simon. For example, the short one, the pale one, the red one, or whatever. Vimhoyim v'sumonim yichtivu koyin. And if they have the same simonim, they're both tall or what have you, then you should write, for example, if one of them is a koyin or a levi, then you write that in the shtar.
Wow.
The Truva Me'ava, one of the big Talmidim of the Noda Yehuda, mentioned a case that happened in Prague in his time, where there was a case like that, where you had two people that their names and their father's names and their grandfather's names were all the same, and there was no particular simon. What the Rabbanim of that time agreed is you can write their last name. That'll be something.
Yeah, but that has to do with simon. Simon could be anything.
The pasuk for simon is a physical simon, but yeah. No, because names can easily change, especially in those days. Last names were a little more fluid than they are now, but still. Yeah.
Last names were really not that common.
Yeah, that's also true. Yeah. Okay. We're going to have to stop here because of the matter of time, although I had wanted to get into the Gemara a little bit, but I do want to mention an interesting little thing. The Mishnah uses the name Yosef ben Shimon, and in general, the Chas, we want to use this kind of situation. We have two people with the same name. Why is Yosef ben Shimon? So Rav Tzadok of Lublin says like this, and he talks about it in a couple of different places, and including, therefore, also it's related to this week's parasha. He says, we know that Shimon is the one Shevet that, in particular, succumbed by the whole story of Maitre Zimri, of Shittim over there at the end of last week's parasha and the beginning of this week's parasha. We know that they're supposed to be, you know, the Eibishter made us separate from the Goyim, and another thing is, we know that the whole Jewish people are named after Yosef. We're called Noyeg Katzon Yosef, for example. Why? Because Yosef was particularly careful. Now in the story of the Potiphar.
Wow.
You would think, therefore, after the story with Zimri, after the story with Shittim, you would think maybe Shimon is excluded from that. Maybe they're not considered anymore and to have any relation to Yosef, to have any relation to the Kedusha of the Jewish people. No, we say Yosef ben Shimon. Yosef is like the son who's Mila Shimon, just like a son is able to be Mezakeh his father by saying Kaddish for him and by doing other mitzvahs in his chus and whatever. The same way, the chus of Yosef is still able to go to Shimon as well. 24,000 altogether in the census in this week's parasha. There are 37,000 compared to the last one. So originally, the first census there were 59,000 and some. The first one, what? Yeah, they lost well over. They lost like 2/3 of the people. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.